I just actually thought of something. I maybe should have been one of the first questions there, Vinny. But what actually woke you up? What awakened Vinny Eastwood?
There's a combination of factors. I started listening to Bill Hicks. A friend of mine showed me From the Wilderness, Mike Rupert?
I've heard of that, sure.
Yeah. He did a presentation called The Truth and Lies of 9/11, still on the internet, and we watched that. And after a while, about halfway through, we just started laughing at virtually everything he said because it was so funny to see how obvious all the connections and everything were between all these scumbaggery agents. My flatmate also introduced me to Bill Hicks, and I started listening to that. I actually basically memorized a number of different gigs by Bill Hicks, and I can recite them at will at the time.
He was 30 years ahead of his time, wasn't he?
I have, here, hold on a second, I'll actually see if I can grab it off the wall for you.
Yeah, but he was actually probably about 30 years ahead of his time.
Yeah, Bill Hicks was. He had a lot of revealing, insightful stuff to say.
Yeah, and here we have, I had it painted for me by a work colleague of mine, Rip Bill Hicks, 1961 to 1994. You know, so he's a young man. And he was like basically one of the greatest sources of inspiration for me. And at the time I was selling weed, you know, as everybody does in university, and I got busted. And naturally, being a really naive young man at the same time, I told the cops everything. I said, yes, I'm a drug dealer. Yes, I've been selling about an ounce a week for about 8 months. And so they took me to jail. I had the worst freaking experience of my entire freaking life. And then when they came to court, they made up evidence, even though they had a full confession, even though the evidence was damning already. Yeah. And it was like the first guy in front of me, he was up for stealing a jar of Craig's jam from a local BP service station, and he was ordered to pay reparations of $4.33 or something like that to replace the jar of Craig's jam. And the guy behind him, who was just in front of me, was up for sexual assault, resisting arrest, and growing 5 cannabis plants. He gets 150 hours community service. And because the cops never advised me of my right to remain silent or any of my rights before they interrogated me, all of the confession and everything that I gave them had to be thrown out. And so all they had on me was 13 grams of cannabis, not even half an ounce. And I got 300 hours of community service.
Hmm. Wow.
So, whoa. And so I dropped out of university, had to work for a year on the vineyards and things like that while I was also doing my community service down at a regional park. And I went back to university the very next year. I had a mescaline trip, and it told me, go to Auckland, go to university, get a job as a telesalesman. And so I did that, you know. I went back to university, got a job as a telesalesman. I became really, really skilled at talking, as you can tell. And I was number one, top of the boards, you know. And then at university, I wrote an essay this one time, you know. And I'd never really worked really hard at university. I'd always, you know, cruise by on C's and C pluses and so on and so forth, you know. Didn't really pay a whole lot of attention or do a hell of a lot of work, frankly. And you don't need to in university because for morons. What I also found out is that when I wrote this essay, one of the topics was anti-television discourse, which means talking smack about TV, basically. And I was like, whoa, yeah, that's something that I want to do. And so I read all this source material, all these books, made all these references, and did a hell of a lot of work on it, and even showed it to a friend of mine's father, who was a English professor who I was friends with as well. And he said, man, that's a brilliant essay. We're talking about how TV mind controls people, how it gives them a short attention span, how it distracts them from real personal issues and destroys their lives, essentially, by putting things in front of them that they'll never achieve and never actually hope to achieve in their entire freaking lifetime. And I handed it in to be marked, and they gave me a D-, and I failed. And I was like, whoa, this place is full of crap. I'm getting the frack out of here. And so I started working full-time. And then I started making a lot of money. And then I've got promoted. I didn't want to do sales anymore. Didn't want to do telesales or anything like that. I wanted to hang up my guns, as it were. So naturally, they promoted me to do another sales job. And I got bored with that. And I started writing up, and I wrote up this essay, the 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company, their training protocols, their provisioning systems, everything. Because I'd spent a lot of my time at that company going around and talking to all these different people from all these different divisions and making sure I understood the entire apparatus of the corporate structure that, as it was working in there, how it was affecting all my fellow employees. And after about 2 minutes or whatever of reading through this thing, the CEO who was, second in charge CEO, just says, gets a text message and he says, I've got to go. 3 days pass, nothing happens. Send him an email. What's going on with these complaints, with these concerns? He says, as far as I'm concerned, the matter is closed. Then a couple of days later, my boss comes to me and says, Vinny, come and have a coffee with me next door. I go, all right. Slaps a piece of paper down in front of me, says, sign it. And I go, what am I signing? He says, we're going to pay you 6 weeks' wages to leave.
Severance.
And I go, what do you mean, like right now? And he's like, yep, 5 minutes. And I was like, okay. Well, I hadn't had a summer holiday in quite a few years. So I took that money. It was like $3,000. It's like, sweet, live off that for a while. Then I had to get another job after all that money ran out. And these people fracked me big time. I actually had to pay like $60 a week to work. I had to pay for my own cell phone. I had to pay for my own gas and everything like that, driving around for these people. And they were paying me about 5% of what those contracts and everything that I was selling for them were worth. And so we quit that job, and a whole bunch of us started this new company. And turns out that the guy who was running that was a psychopath. He'd give me a call at 10 o'clock at night on a Friday while I'm at my friend's place having a beer on the couch, telling me to get up, get off the couch, find a pen and paper, and get the number down of a client to call on Monday. Not an isolated incident.
Wow.
All the time. I was getting so stressed out. I had to get high every single freaking day before work because I was so stressed out. I just couldn't handle life. And I was watching like 2 documentaries a day at that point. My knowledge base of the world around me was starting to geometrically kind of spiral out of control, and it was destroying me because I knew that I was a slave and I was a corporate stooge and that I was doing it for the money and that I didn't have any freaking choice in the matter. And I saw all this crap around me, and I saw that there was no alternative media in New Zealand. I mean, apart from my friend Jonathan Eisen, who does this magazine here, Uncensored Magazine, best freaking magazine in the country, bar none. And one day, I felt like quitting, and I call up my friend John Eisen, and I said to him, you know, I feel like quitting, and he goes, well, does it feel right? And I go, yeah, yes, it does. It does feel right. So I quit, and I had $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers that had been given to me as a bonus for 45 days' work, and $5,000 cash. I was capable of living off that for a while. So I bought a camera, bought a Mac computer, I got the frack out there and started interviewing the activists at the protests, started filming the public meetings and uploading them. After a while, a guy comes along named Mitch Santel, greatest producer money can buy. Incidentally, he volunteered because I couldn't pay him anything. And he offered me a slot as co-host on American Freedom Radio with a guy named Brent Johnson. American Freedom Radio and a lot of other people didn't like Brent Johnson, so they cancelled our show and just gave it to me. 3 years later, here I am. I have the country's number one ranked YouTube channel. I have more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, which is the equivalent of the New York Times of New Zealand. I have a radio show that is 5 days a week. I've put more New Zealand activists on live radio than any other media entity in the country's history. In fact, all of them combined.
That's awesome.
I put out more hours of YouTube videos per day than about 90% of people in the truth movement worldwide. And that's talking about people who are actually putting up videos every single day from their shows and so on and so forth. Not many people do that.
Sure.
I do.
Sure.
Right.
Everything that I've been given, from my shirt to the lighting to the Mac computers that I've got in front of me now, this microphone, the printer, the TV behind me, the cameras, the tripods, the wireless microphones that I use when I'm going out to the protest, the giant megaphones of 100 watts, of which there's only 6 in the frickin' country, and the cops have 3 of them. Okay? This is something that has all been given to me because I have proven beyond reasonable doubt, which I believe is what you should, that should be your balance of proof, right? That I am the alternative media entity in New Zealand. I give everybody a voice. I give everybody a platform. I'm not stingy with it. I don't care if you haven't made a name for yourself. I don't care if you don't have a website. I don't care if you've never been on radio before. I don't care if you've never used Skype before in your entire freaking existence. I will give you a couple of hours on air to tell your story because everybody's got one. And the one thing that really frustrates me about mainstream media is that there are so many activists out there who have incredible information, who have endured immense suffering, and there is nobody in the media who will listen to them.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's right.
Hey, Todd, I don't know if you realize it or not. I did tell you one time when I booked Vinny that he also booked us. I don't know if you actually realize that or not, but Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern, we will be on Vinny's show, and that is going to be actually your Friday morning, right, Vinny?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to be our Thursday night was going to be his Friday morning show, 6 p.m. Central. We'll be on his show. And while we got like 2 minutes.
5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern.
Right.
Awesome. Yes, yes,
yes. I look forward to it.
I'm sorry. 5 p.m. Central, 6 Eastern. While we got like a couple minutes left here, Vinny, go ahead and do the plug thing.
All right. It's kind of like a bathtub. Doesn't work very well without a plug.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so I've got a number of websites. I want to encourage people to go to my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Vincent Eastwood. Or you just search Vinny Eastwood, Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. And my website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's the, T-H-E, Vinny with a Y, eastwoodshow.com. You can get the archives for free off of there. If you donate or subscribe, you can, sure enough, you know, take away the commercial-free archives. In fact, you can have them even if you don't donate or subscribe. I don't really give a frack, all right? At the end of the day, I'm just trying to survive. I'm trying to do what is not being done. And what is not being done in New Zealand is having an alternative media apparatus to support the activists who are sacrificing their life, their liberty, their property in many cases to serve the greater cause of freedom in this nation. And indeed, everything that's happening here is happening elsewhere at the same time. So I get on American activists too, because you got to listen to people. That's something that George Norrie told me when I interviewed him. I'm very lucky to be able to interview him. And hats off to Mitch Santel. He's now producing the Hagman and Hagman report out of Los Angeles. You got to talk to the people. That's it. If you don't talk to the people, you're suddenly going to start getting full of yourself and you're going to turn into some form of douchebag. And if I ever turn into some form of douchebag, please, ladies and gentlemen, expose me. Okay? Keep me on the straight and narrow, because I've got a lot of talent, I've got a lot of ability, and it could be used for great evil if I were to stray from my path. Thank you.
Sure. Did you also put the Real Guerrilla Media in there too, or?
Oh yeah. RealGuerrillaMedia.com. RealGuerrillaMedia.com. The reason why it's a Real Guerrilla Media is because my name Guerrilla Media was stolen by a sociopathic scumbag who I will not name.
All right.
And well, if you get out of line, the people will tar and feather you promptly.
Well, let's hope so. And if somebody steals my ideas, it means, hey, I must have an idea worth stealing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's right.
And on that note, we'll go ahead and end this marathon tonight. It's been a very good show. And we thank you for coming on, Vinny.
I really appreciate the platform and giving me a full 2 hours. It's been really lovely, gentlemen. I've enjoyed it.
Yes.
Absolutely. It was great talking with you.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good night.